This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, thank you very much, Roger. Good morning to you. Good morning to the world as we join you every Saturday morning to talk about the world's most important basic industry, the production of food. Without food, nothing else happens, and we can't ever forget that. A lot going on. World Dairy Expo coming to an end this evening at about 5 o'clock in Madison, Wisconsin. As a matter of fact, in the last 7 days, I have had the opportunity to attend two of my favorite functions in agriculture. A week ago today, I was in Peoples Valley, Arizona, about 100 miles north of Phoenix, for the annual Yavapai County Cattle Growers Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue. And we've attended that now for the past decade or so, and it's a great time to come together with the cowboys of Arizona, the cattlemen and cattlewomen who provide us with that good beef every week or every day. And then Wednesday, I was in Madison for the World Dairy Expo and visited with a lot of dairy farmers, and I'll be talking a little more about that later on in the program. Jim Fazell will be joining us, and subject today, trees, because this time of the year is a good time to plant trees, and if we don't plant them, Mother Nature may not plant that many. So we'll talk trees. And then, of course, on the market get-together today, Max Armstrong sits down with Mike Pearson. And he has been a longtime analyst of the market scene for agriculture. And they'll be talking about some of the ups and downs of the agricultural world from a commodity price standpoint. So we have a lot going on this morning, and we hope you can stay with us for that. Oh, and I do have to mention, last night, Gloria and I got together for dinner with Jim and Jane Fazell, celebrating their 43rd wedding anniversary. And where did we meet? Well, of course, at Jameson's in Sun City, Huntley. We have been working together over 4 decades, talking gardening and trees and lawns and vegetables and flowers and all that. So it was nice to have the opportunity to sit down and just visit about family, about work, and about everything else that we have been involved in for the past 4 decades together. So good weekend, and this morning, yeah, we'll head to Gary Lang because they're a good sponsor of ours, and I've been dealing with the Gary Lang family for years, and it's service time for the automobile. So there you have my rundown. Now we'll get to your rundown, and we'll get to our visit with Jim Fazell when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Jim Fazell, specialist in ornamental horticulture. Time to join us and talk about what this week, Jim.
Well, we've got a couple of topics we want to cover. We want to talk a little bit about trees, and especially since it's tree planting time. As soon as the trees begin to harden up for the fall, begin to turn color a little bit, it's time to dig them and get them in the landscape. We've had trouble with trees. We've talked about it before, the maples and the oaks, and a lot of the evergreens are suffering because of some new diseases that have come in, or some diseases. Of course, oak wilt is still around, and verticillium. We have a new one that's affecting oak trees. It's Bisconioxia canker. Don't worry about that big name. That's the name
it's
of the organism.
What?
Bisconioxia canker. This is a disease that affects oak trees, and it usually doesn't affect them unless they're weakened by something. Of course, we've had weather problems, unusual weather. Actually, you know, this unusual, I'll put that in quotation marks, kind of weather has happened before. It happened in the 30s and the 50s and the 80s and some in the 90s. So the stressed trees that have been stressed by this and other things are more susceptible to any of these opportunistic diseases, especially older mature trees. And these tend to be the ones that are dying right now because they can't tolerate a lot of the changes that have taken place. And there have been a tremendous number of changes with increasing urbanization in our area in the last, since the Second World War, which is, 75, 80 years ago. So what do you do about it? Well, first of all, you need to take care of your trees. Watering during dry weather, we don't have any of that right now. Both summer and winter, it's important, especially if we don't have good snow cover, to get these trees watered in mild weather during the winter. You need to provide drainage where needed. You can't have trees standing in water. Also, we find a lot of trees that are damaged by overwatering during the summer with the irrigation systems. You need to be very careful about overwatering trees. But the most important thing that we can do about our trees is to plant trees. Nurseries are well supplied right now. We need to identify spots where trees would enhance the surroundings. You can interplant with the existing trees. Of course, they only last so long, so you need to have new ones coming along to have a perpetual urban forest. If you have no trees or if you've lost your trees, this gives you a chance, if you've lost trees, to make up for the mistake that was made planting the first one. Plant the frame of your home to provide shade, especially in the summertime. You don't want shade in the wintertime or the snow won't melt on your sidewalk. You need to provide screening from the views, from noise, from the wind and sun. Make a plan. It's important to pretty well draw out your property pretty nearly to scale and locate the plants where they're going to have plenty of room, where they're going to fit when they're mature. You need to decide how big they're going to get. You can get this from a lot of books and so forth. And you want to actually measure the space in your yard to find out how much room you have. And keep in mind, this cute little tree that's 3 feet wide when you plant the thing is going to be 50 feet wide when it gets mature. You don't want to hide your windows or entryways when the tree is big, and you don't want to interfere with traffic like pedestrians trying to walk down your sidewalk or people trying to get up your driveway. Then you need to identify the plants that fit your requirements from form and texture and with the colors. And there are a lot of resources out there. The Morton Arboretum, Botanic Garden, other arboreta like Clem's and in Rockford, and the University of Illinois down at Urbana, the Burner up in Milwaukee, and Quad Cities out in the Quad Cities. And there are books out there. My old revised Illinois Gardener's Guide is still good, although it's been 20 years since that was written, and there have been a lot of changes. And then online, you can find out a lot of information online. There is a good website, extension.illinois.edu/tree-selector/. This is the University of Illinois Extension Service line, and it is an excellent resource, especially for this part of the country. Once you get your right tree decided, you need to visit your local nursery and get a locally grown tree if possible. It needs to be grown in the same kind of soil as you have. If it's grown in a nursery, it survived in the nursery, so you can assume it's going to be perfectly good to survive here. Select a plant. Now, be critical when you select a plant. Don't just take whatever is available. You're going to have it a long time, so you need to take the time to pick one that will suit your purposes. And all these things I mentioned above are important. Tag that plant. Nursery will dig and deliver it, or there are some that are already dug or container grown. Those are fine if they were grown locally. Be ready when you get it to plant immediately. You want to soak it thoroughly when you get it and sit back and enjoy it. Now, I want to spend a little time talking about garden finish-up. Fall is here, no question about that, and there's a lot of stuff to do in the garden. By the way, I've been out in the garden. If you just walk out to the garden to take a look, the mosquitoes seem like they're going to swarm you, especially with all this weather we've had. So if you're going to be out there for any time, be sure you protect yourself. Long sleeves, a hat, long pants, and mosquito repellent. If you did your lawn repairs a couple of weeks ago, by the way, the seed should have germinated and the grass should be nearing mowing height. If it can dry out a little bit, you need to mow it as needed. If it's still pretty wet in that spot, you want to keep your mower out of there because it will make ruts. Keep picking the veggies. Cover them up when a frost is expected. Old blankets, bed sheets, and so forth will work. Plastic does not work. Then with the cleanup, you need to pull out the spent vegetables and the annuals. They're pretty well done now. Trim off the tops of your perennials, the ones that are finished. If you have some that have echinacea, for instance, that still has a lot of seeds out there, you're going to have finches come in and eat those. Don't take those out until the birds are done feeding on them. Trim the tops off and add all this stuff to your compost pile, or you can shred it and dig it into the garden. Or what we normally do is to dig out one of the beds in our vegetable garden, double deep, that's 18 inches deep, and keep that soil on the side, but toss all the plant tops and leaves in one of those beds. The soil can be used for covering up roses a little bit later. It's too early to do that right now. So you might want to cover it up so it doesn't get wet, or will dry out if it's already too wet. Anyway, once you get the garden cleaned up, especially the vegetable garden, you want to turn the soil and leave it rough for winter. That will allow the moisture that we get and the snow that we get to percolate into the soil, and it'll be there when you need it next spring. There's some things you can do to replace the annuals. We have a lot of stuff on the shelves out in the markets, and even in the chain stores have mums, they have fall icicle pansies, they have asters. Flowering kale is always fun. In fact, it generally lasts through pretty much through the winter. Actually, with the cool mornings we've had lately, in fact, last week, I guess a week ago today, we had some frost in the outlying area, so it's time to take care of some things. And one of the things you need to take care of is the annual plants or the house plants and so forth that you've had outdoors for the winter. They've had a vacation out there. Vacation's over. Pot plants that have spent the summer, especially things like your ferns and weeping figs. By the way, I have a friend that has an orange tree, a lemon tree, and a fig tree. And they still bring those in. I don't know how they carry them. But anyway, you want to get those cleaned up. You want to hose the dirt off the pots. Treat for any bugs that might be on there. And you want to acclimate them. Bring them into an unheated porch until they're used to the weather. Try to get them indoors before you start heating. Anyway, there are a lot of things that need to be done in the garden right now, especially if you have plants that have been out for the summer. Some of the things that can be brought into are things like pot herbs where you might want to keep your chives over them. But anyway, there's a lot of stuff to do. One of the things you need to do right now after you've done them is to put your entries in your garden journal and then sit back and enjoy.
You are a real fan of garden journals, and do yours go back for years? Or?
Oh, yes. I've got my garden journal here from 1972. In fact, I was looking back to find out what we were growing at that time. It's pretty much the same.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He's a man of detail, and he always has been, as long as we've been doing these events, keeping journals of what he plants, where he plants it in his garden. Jim Fazell, who is the specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show, and a very good friend, and we wish a 43rd anniversary to him and Jane, which we did last night at Jameson's at Sun City. And it was interesting. 43 years ago, he did the morning broadcast with me. And then he and Jane went out and got married. And it's been a great friendship and relationship with Jim and Jane Fazell. We wish them well. We're at 22 minutes after 5 o'clock now here on the Saturday Morning Show. And I'm going to check in on one of my favorite events that I talked about earlier, the Yavapai County Cattle Growers Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue, and will come up after we take this break on the Saturday Morning Show. Coming up on 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, I mentioned at the outset that two of my favorite events, the World Dairy Expo and the Yavapai County Cattle Growers Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue in Peoples Valley, Arizona, took place a week ago today, and I was there for that event. One of the many things I love about agriculture and the people involved in agriculture is traditions that go for years and years, and it's always interesting to know how they got started. And with this event, I talked to longtime friend Andy Grossetta, former president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, who has a ranch in Yavapai County, and asked him to tell me again how this club calf sale and beef barbecue got started.
Here's this event started in 1932. This is the 86th year. And back during the early 30s, as we all know, that was during the Depression era. No one had any money, the local people or the people on the national level. And a group of cattlemen in Yavapai County recognized the importance of having representation in Washington, D.C., being represented by a national cattlemen's organization. And so they came together here in Yavapai County to raise money for the national organization. And that's how this event started. Ranchers in this county brought their calves, consigned calves, to a calf sale here. They started a barbecue, a social event, along with the calf sale, so cattlemen and ranchers could bring their family, their kids and grandkids, their friends and neighbors, and they brought their calves. They had their calves judged, and they sold their calves. And the proceeds from the sale of those calves, part of the proceeds from those sale, went to the national organization. Every year since 1932, the president of the Yavapai Cattle Growers has proudly carried a check, hand-carried a check, to the national organization. And that's happened every year consecutively since 1932. In fact, we're the only county cattlemen's association, and we're very proud of that, that we've been able to support the national organization with a contribution every year, those proceeds coming from this event.
And next year, early in January and February in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Yavapai County Cattle Growers will present another check, that's a long-time tradition, to the National Cattlemen's Beef Association at their get-together, as I said, in New Orleans. Now, let's talk about another cattle event. Happened yesterday. Happened at the State Fair of Texas, the annual youth livestock auction. And 14-year-old Ashton Floyd had the grand champion steer named Ultra. And auctioneer Bill Hall coaxed bidders to get the fine grand champion. And at one point in the auction said, you can't get one at Wally World, you can't get one at Kmart, but you can get one here at the Texas State Fair. The final price, a record-breaking $150,000. And before the auction yesterday, Ultra had been crowned the State Fair's grand champion steer and was the star. The event, now in its 70th year, features livestock, steers, pigs, goats, raised by nearly 400 students from across Texas. And the students sell their animals to the highest bidders. It's something that we've seen in county fairs and state fairs all across the country. In this case, proceeds go toward the auctions scholarship program. Ashton, from Denver City, Texas, near the New Mexico border, will pocket $30,000 of the $150,000 record price, with $120,000 going to the scholarship fund. And Ashton, who has cared for Ultra for the last year, has raised livestock her entire life. She has presented animals at auctions before, but yesterday was the first time she's had the grand champion steer at the Texas State Fair. So we congratulate 4-H'ers and FFAers and young farmers and ranchers across the country for going to the county fairs and state fairs. I call them the Super Bowl and the World Series of those young livestock people. And congratulations. Wow. $120,000 goes to scholarships for education. And Roger, I'm looking at my rain gauge in Huntley, and yesterday till midnight we got 2/3 of an inch of rain. After midnight, another 1/2 inch of rain. So for the week, 4.5 inches of rain have fallen into my rain gauge in Huntley. And right now, harvest time, you want to see a little sunshine and dry weather. So that's your assignment, Roger, to get dry weather in here.
I'm on it, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. And we're back with the Saturday morning show here on WGN Radio, where it's time for Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion. This week, asking the question, what's wrong with getting a job?
If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, speed up your drains and solve your problem with Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster, it does the job for you. Be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at Wink, W-H-I-N-K, wink.com.
So the question for this week, Samuelson Says, is what's wrong with getting a job? Let me explain the reason. We are now past the end of September, the deadline for writing a new farm bill, and we still don't have a farm bill. In past farm bills, the sticking point very often has been the nutrition program, once known as food stamps, now known as SNAP, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. In this version of the farm bill, some legislators are suggesting that if you are between the ages of 18 and 59, in good health, without family challenges, then to qualify for food assistance, you should get a job or prove that you are looking for one. Jobs are certainly available. I see help wanted signs throughout my community. The September jobs report showed a 49-year low in the unemployment rate, as well as claims for weekly unemployment benefits. There are jobs available. So what's wrong with getting a job? Well, this may be old hat, but when I was growing up, if you wanted something, you got a job, you worked and saved, earning the money, and when you earned and saved enough money, you then bought the item you wanted. You did not go to a parent or the government to provide you with what you wanted. A friend of mine emailed me recently and asked this question. Do you remember when nothing in America was free? No free cell phones, no free food, no free housing, and no free a lot of other stuff? Yes, I do. So what's wrong with working to qualify for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program? I don't see anything wrong with that. So let's get to work and finish the farm bill. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks here at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock on the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong standing by with special guest Mike Pearson to take a look at markets, what they're doing, and why. And we'll get to that when we continue here on the Saturday morning show.
We're pleased to welcome into the studio this weekend Mr. Mike Pearson, a no stranger, not at all a stranger to many of our farmer friends, Ag News Daily, podcast on the internet.
That's right, podcast, website, you name it, Max, we're trying to be there every day, just like you guys are. We're all trying to support the American farmer and, well, the Canadian farmer as well. We're happy to look after our friends in the North.
The North American scope.
That's exactly right.
Well, as we're in the midst of the harvest here, some haven't done much at all as you look across the sweep of the Corn Belt, and others have made a dramatic dent in this harvest and are almost done. It's not treated everybody equally yet, has it?
No, it certainly hasn't, Max. And, you know, when you say in the midst of harvest, that implies the middle of harvest. And, yeah, on average, we're in the middle of harvest. You and I were talking earlier. Central Illinois looks to be getting close to wrap it up. Through Ohio, it sounds like, making some really good progress. Growers in my part of the world in East Central Iowa, maybe they've got a field of corn out. Maybe they've made some headway into some beans. But we've been sitting for the better part of a week, and it looks like we're going to be sitting for a little while longer from Missouri, and there's not a whole lot left to combine in northern Missouri due to that drought. and all the way up through Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, down in through western Kansas. They're talking 4 to 6 inches of rain and high winds. And it's just, it's a frustrating harvest for half the Corn Belt. But I think it's been a pretty successful harvest for the growers that have been able to get in and get going if they didn't need to chop, and northern Missouri is the sad exception to that rule.
Exactly. There's a lot of crop standing in the field that isn't standing very well, I hear, west of the Mississippi River. Have you heard any personal reports on that, and what have you seen?
Boy, I've heard from a lot of different growers, a lot of different varieties. This time, it isn't linked to any particular seed variety or trait. It's just, and I'm no agronomist, Max. I've said that before. I've got a degree in history. You know, that's the only thing I could graduate with. But I've talked to a bunch of agronomists. They say it's just the growing conditions this year. That wet spring combined with some heat, boom, that corn shot up like crazy. And that left some brittle stalks pretty well all across the western part of the Corn Belt. And boy, I tell you, we had some 50-mile-an-hour-plus winds here this last week, coupled with some more additional rain. It's going to be interesting, and not the good kind of interesting, when growers get those combines rocking and rolling, just to see how many ears actually are still attached to those stalks.
But now think about it. How many years have we had very significant crop losses due to the inability to get the crop out of the field? Now, it's frustrating to the grower. It's maddening. If you're crawling across that field one way at 1 mile an hour, there's nothing fun about that at all. But in the whole scheme of things, when you look at the size of the crop, it's still going to be a 14.9-something-something billion bushel crop, isn't it, that we harvest?
I certainly think so. You know, it's not going to shrink any, or not going to shrink markedly here before the combines get rolling. But, I think it's more the frustration. You hit the nail on the head there, Max. It's grower frustration with, oh, what we could have had, and now we're giving up 2-3 bushels in the field per acre. You know, that stings a little bit when we need every, you know, $3.50 we can get our hands on. Absolutely. Out here in corn country. Now, all of that being said, it does seem like we've got some good things on the horizon, at least price related. You know, the first part is this weather. As big of a pain as it is for growers, this could be a relatively bullish factor here as we get through harvest. We were anticipating a huge crop, early plant, early harvest, quick maturity. We figured, or the elevators, I should say, had figured on having this crop in the bin pretty much already. And in a lot of places, they don't. They cleared out that old crop, made some new crop sales, and that new crop hasn't yet arrived. So my advice to growers is pay attention. Look outside your normal cash buyers for any uncontracted bushels. If you have basis left floating out there, keep an eye on it. This could be a year where we see some weird basis pops at different elevators based on those elevators that need to fill that contract right away.
So the basis activity is the thing that may provide the best play here for growers, just depending on, you know, what's happening with the local ethanol demand at a particular pocket, or
absolutely,
or whether what's needed down the river.
Yep, if they've already railed out all of their old crop corn and they got a barge coming, you know, they're going to do what it takes to fill that barge. They're going to do what it takes to fill that boat sitting on Lake Erie. And those are the things that I'm not exactly sure that they're going to be huge market movers for growers, but like we've all said, in this year, pennies count. You know, your banker, your lender's going to notice if you're able to pick up an extra 5-10 cents on a weird basis move because you had your trucks ready and you were ready to rock and roll and get some of that old crop corn delivered if you still have some in the bin. And I've heard from some growers that they certainly do. That's going to work out in your favor. The flip side is there's not a whole lot going on futures-wise while we look ahead to the end of the year. You know, there's just not a whole lot of movement out there. We're still in an upward trend line. Corn looks to be doing a little bit better than I think we'd anticipated right after that USDA report of 181 point whatever bushels per acre. Massive, massive national corn yield. We haven't collapsed. Demand is still very strong. We're still bringing down carryout. We still have hogs on feed. We still have cattle on feed. We still have people driving vehicles that need ethanol. All of those things speak well to demand going forward. It just doesn't necessarily speak well to $4 plus demand going forward.
Well, what do you think about the USDA report coming up, the survey for which has been done here in recent days? We have that report looming on the horizon next Thursday.
Jeez.
USDA's estimate as of the 1st of October. Will either of those numbers or both climb in the October report, either corn or beans?
Big crops get bigger, Max.
That's exactly the phrase I cited the other day talking with a buddy about it.
Absolutely. And will they get bigger? Who knows? You know, if we could read the USDA's mind, yeah, I probably wouldn't have driven over here in the middle of the night last night to be on TV. I'd be, you know, asleep in bed on an island somewhere if I could read the USDA's mind. But I think the trend is definitely that we could see potential yield bumps in both. Now, after last month's huge jump, my inclination would be perhaps we'll see corn stay flat. And this is just a guess. You know, this is me at the blackjack table laying out my bets here, Max. I would say we're going to see corn probably stay flat, but I would say there is still room to move upwards in that bean number just because the folks I've heard who have been able to get out and run in some beans, they've been pretty darn good.
They have.
Yes.
Those reports coming in. Even guys that are usually a little bit shy with me and reading directly off of the yield monitor haven't been shy in citing what they've seen.
No.
This fall.
I've had a couple of, hey, Mike, gosh, don't tell anybody, but we were 72 bushels on that field with an APH of, you know, 61 or an APH of 57. And holy cow, they're pretty darn pleased. And, you know, again, it all comes back to that August weather. How'd you do in August? But by and large, it certainly sounds like bean genetics have caught up. That
finally,
yes.
You know, you think about all of those years that we saw that yield just plateau there, and
yep,
they just couldn't move it. But boy, we wondered, and here it is now.
I think that's what it is. I don't know who the scientist was that finally cracked the code, but yeah, it definitely seems like we are seeing beans move like corn moved, which is a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because, again, hey, even at a dollar under, money is still money. If we can bushel out of this, you know, bankers and lenders are going to appreciate that. The curse is, despite the good trade news we've had here over the past 2 weeks with the Korea-U.S. free trade agreement getting signed, NAFTA 2.0, the U.S.-Canada-Mexico agreement.
Yes.
And then...
That's U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Yeah, right. U.S.-MCA, right. U.S.
first.
That's right. Well, of course. U.S.
Canada
Marine Corps
last and Mexico in the middle.
Yeah. Well, as it should be. Mexico was the first to sign on. You know, we can appreciate that. I think President Trump pretty loyal to those who signed on to his team. We still have that battle with China, and I don't think that is going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
A lot of people are saying that. I, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm wondering if there is maybe some very very active negotiating taking place here, and maybe we're not aware of it.
Well, I hope that is the case, Max. It sounds like, at least from the official, you know, reports, that any type of negotiation that's taking place is happening at very low levels, and it's not necessarily going to get to President Xi or President Trump. However, I did hear that President Xi is expected to make a trip to the U.S. next year, probably towards the end of next year, and actually sit down face-to-face with President Trump and hash out some stuff. North Korea,
that's a long ways away, pal.
That's a long ways away. And so that's what has me a little nervous.
Soybeans, mm-hmm, that basis that is so ugly as you look out of the Northwest producing areas. Unless something happens with Chinese trade, there's no way that's going to improve, is there, Mike?
No, I don't think there is.
And it's a gap of a buck or so.
Oh, a buck 50? I was talking to a lender from, eastern part of North Dakota here this last week, and he said it was a buck 80.
Yeah, oh.
Yeah. And boy, that smarts. And you look at the Dakotas as being an incredible example of American farmers adapting to price signals. They were, 6% of the U.S. soybean crop in South Dakota in 2008. In 2018, they're going to be 16% North and South Dakota in, 10 years we've done that. Unfortunately, they're in a situation where they grew so quick, they had one major buyer. And when that major buyer steps out, it's a period of readjustment. Now, the good news is Taiwan did step in. They said they're going to purchase a heck of a lot more beans. Of course, they're not able to source from Brazil because that's all going to China. So they're going to come to the U.S.
That would be railed out of the Pacific Northwest.
Absolutely.
Or shipped out of those ports.
Absolutely. That's coming out of the PNW. With this Korea-U.S. agreement, we should expect to see some more bean purchases coming out of South Korea, again, coming out of that PNW area. And I'm still inclined to believe now that this USMCA agreement is signed. NAFTA is so much easier to say, Max. I wish they'd have kept it at NAFTA. But USMCA, now that that's been signed, I wonder if we won't see some Canadian purchases of North and South Dakota beans, Minnesota beans, and then exporting them out of British Columbia into China. I don't know if that's going to happen, but boy, if I were an enterprising Canadian with a semi, that's what I'd be doing.
Take it right up through the Mount McDonald Tunnel.
Absolutely.
Right over to the coast.
Hammer down, buddy. Westbound and down. Let's get those beans out there, and that would help. Anything we can do to reduce that surplus of beans. Over the long haul, I think we're going to continue to see infrastructure get put in North and South Dakota to cope with more bean acres. They're building more crushing facilities. But that's it's like President Xi coming next year. It's a long time, a long way off into the future before these things happen.
It's great to have you in the studio, sir. Let's do it again before too long if you can find your way here.
Always, Max. You just give me a shout and I'll be here.
Take care, Mike. Thank you. Mike Pearson, Ag News Daily, joining us here.
World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin comes to an end this evening at 5:30. That will happen right after the parade of champions and the selection of the 2018 Supreme Champions, including the Supreme Dairy Female of the Year. They not only judge livestock, but they also judge judging teams, showmanship teams, and other categories for people of all ages. I noted yesterday the results of the youth showmanship contest. They had 337 FFA and 4-H members in the World Dairy Expo Youth Showmanship Contest. Boy, the Canadians did very well. In the category ages 9 through 12, 1 and 2 were from Ontario, Canada. Number 3 from Madison, Wisconsin. In the intermediate age group, 13 to 16, the top 2 were from Ontario, Canada. And then the third place went to a youngster from Evans City, Pennsylvania. And then in the senior category, again, number 1 and number 2 from Ontario, Canada, and number 3 from British Columbia. You had to go to number 4 to find an American from Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. And this evening, when it all wraps up, we'll know who the top Supreme Dairy Cow is for the coming year. Well, that's about our time for this morning here on the Saturday Morning Show. As always, we thank Bob Ferguson for handling the engineering chores that makes it all happen. We thank you, as always, for your listening to us talk agriculture. And as we wind down this week, it used to be that Columbus Day was a holiday in the stock market and the agricultural market. Not anymore. On Monday, Federal Reserve will be closed, government offices will be closed, and check with your bank before you head there, because a lot of banks will be closed as well. When it comes to trade, December wheat gained 5 cents a bushel yesterday. December corn gained 0.5 cents. And November soybeans gained 10 cents in trade at the Chicago Board of Trade. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the December lean hog contract gained $2.25 a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract gained 37 cents. And the October feeder cattle contract gained 87 cents in the market activity yesterday.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.